to the Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor the Parent Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Welcome to the Parents Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. I'm Lydia L. Curry.
And I'm Cathy Weston.
So this week's show is all about reading and fairy tales, to sum it up in a nutshell, Cathy. Yeah?
That's right. Well, basically, as you know, if you're living in Hertfordshire, it's the Hearts Challenge for reading this week. So we've all been talking about books, discussing with each other on around all the library forums about which books to buy to keep our kids occupied during the summer, on their trips, on the plane. So we've been mad about books all week, haven't we?
That's it. And it's called the Creepy House Summer Reading Challenge 2013. I'm not joking. Creepy House it is. So what it's all about is there are spine tingling adventures waiting for children of Hertfordshire when they take part in the 2013 Summer Reading Challenge, and they're at libraries across the county. You can join the adventure at the Creepy House simply by reading 6 books from the library. You can also discover the secrets of Creepy House and meet some of the hair-raising residents.
Not so seasonal either, but never mind.
So all you need to do, the challenge starts on the 13th of July, Saturday, and goes till the 7th of September. Children of all ages are free to collect a starters pack, which is also free, from any Hertfordshire library, including the mobile libraries. And participants will be rewarded with stickers when they visit their local library to talk to staff about what books they've been reading. And if they complete the challenge, they've been invited to attend a special a presentation ceremony.
So that's one way in which children, can access books. It's obviously through the library. But we are very, very excited tonight on the show to have a best-selling children's author. It's not often we've had children's authors actually on the show, is it, Lydia?
No, absolutely.
So it's very exciting. And she also happens to be a mum. So we're hoping, her name's Abby Longstaff, and we're hoping she's on the other line from Barnet.
Hello, yes,
hello,
I'm
Abby.
Here.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Thanks for joining us this evening, Abby.
Thank you.
Well, Abby, we're all talking about books this week in Hertfordshire because we've launched lots of summer reading challenges. So it's very exciting to actually hear from someone who writes children's books. Mm-hmm. And you're also a mum.
That's right, I am. I've got a 12-year-old boy and a 9-year-old girl.
So, we're always in amazement by anyone who actually gets time to do anything else. So,
yeah,
congratulations.
Thank you. It is hard to kind of squeeze it in between everything else, but, you know, I like it. So, it gives me a good reason to do it.
Now, let's talk a little bit, first of all, about the range of books that you have on offer on Amazon. We've been reading them. We're looking online. You've got a website. The Guardian has covered you in their best-selling lists. Tell us a little bit about the titles, because they're all fantastically named.
I do a series for Random House of picture books called The Fairy Tale Hairdresser, and it's really fun. It's about the hairdresser in fairy tale land, and she does kind of big bad wolf whiskers and Father Christmas's beard and the fairy godmother's beautiful hair, and she gets up to all kinds of adventures, and it follows a fairy tale each time, and so it's quite fun because it's a bit of a twist on a well-known tale. And the illustrations are fantastic. Lauren Beard does them, and they're full of characters to spot. So you can open a page and you find Goldilocks here and you can find the Three Bears there, and children just really love spotting the characters they already know.
Abby, just remind the listeners what age group the books are for.
Probably I'd say 3 to 5, but yeah. Often older children quite like them too, because there's a lot to see, and it's a bit pantomime like in that there's a lot of jokes that older children might get and younger children won't. So Mr. Big Bad Wolf runs the optician, and he says, all the better to see you with. And an older child will get that, but a younger child won't. But the younger one will still like the idea of, you know, Mr. Wolf being there and seeing how he's going to have his whiskers trimmed and things.
And also, Abby, you've got lovely, some of the other titles, How Rapunzel Got Her Prince.
Yes, that's The Fairy Tale Hairdresser and How Rapunzel Got Her Prince. That's the first one. And the second one's The Fairy Tale Hairdresser in Cinderella. And the third one comes out this September, and that's Sleeping Beauty. But then I also have The Mummy Shop, which is a really fun book about when your mummy's being really annoying and making you tidy your room and things, you go to the mummy shop and get a different one. Oh. And it's about a little boy who tries to do this, and of course he gets a range of mummies and he finds out, you know, big spoiler at the end, he wants his own mummy back.
That's really
they're good fun. I mean, I enjoy writing them. They're a bit quirky and interesting. I like them.
Tell us a little bit about the Malice family. I'm just checking out your website, yeah. Abby, and it sounds a bit, it looks, is it a badger?
It's a little sort of raccoon. They're really cute, the Malice family. It's about a boy who is the only good child in a long line of evil raccoons. And they're all kind of taking over the world all the time, trying to dominate everything. And the little boy has to run around trying to make them good. And it's quite a fun story. I wrote it originally for my son, who was actually a bit of a reluctant reader. He always loved books. He loved being read to. He didn't like to kind of just sit down and read. And I wrote it originally, and it's got lots of kind of fake bombs and things exploding and ice cream this and really fun, lively stuff so that he could kind of get in a bit more, get into reading. And it did work, actually. He quite liked reading it. And it's published by Pearson. They have it in schools a lot, the Malice family. It's good fun.
And Abby, to what extent, you know, I know you're a mum, but have your children shaped the sort of stories that you've been writing? And it's a lovely motivation, isn't it?
When yeah.
You're trying to get your son more enthusiastic about reading.
Yeah. I mean, it very much. I think when you play with your children, like I do, I've always played lots of games with them. And the Mummy Shop was the game that we played when my children were little. And they would say, oh, why are you making me get out the bath? And I would say, oh, you could get a new mummy, but she might be a spider. And then she'd be like this. And they'd say, oh, no, we want our mummy back. And it would just be a game that we developed. And I'm one of six children. And we used to play games all the time as small children. We didn't have much television or anything. We just played all day these crazy games. And one of the games we played a lot was fairy tale, sort of hairdressery salons. We loved a business. We loved the idea. We'd make our own money, make a treatment list. We'd do our toys' hair. And so the fairy tale hairdresser really came out of that game that I played as a child with my sisters. And we always loved things like schools or anything that involved loads of organization. And the salon was perfect. And I find that kids now, when they listen to the book, they love to know about the detail of the salon. How does she do the hair? How do the characters come in? How does she get... They love that, the business side of it, as much as they love the styling side of it.
Isn't that interesting? I wouldn't have expected the kids to kind of even pick up on that, really.
Yeah.
And how did you know to even include that kind of thing? How did you pick up on their interest in that?
I don't know. I think it's just because I was the oldest of six. And so I was looking after my youngest sister, which she came along when I was 12. So I've always been around small children growing up, and I kind of just noticed what they liked and what they didn't. And when I do the readings in shops and schools, often when children come to me and talk to me afterwards, it's that side, it's the business side that they're interested in. You know, they like the fact that my main character, she's called Kitty Lacey, they like that Kitty lives above her shop that she runs, and they like that she chooses all the different shampoos. So she's got shampoo for trolls and shampoo for princes, and they like that she runs it. They like that element of control and playing at being grown up, I suppose.
And Abby, I have to say, the traditional fairy tales, you know, perhaps, you know, the sort of feminist take on them would be, gosh, we're all just hanging around waiting for Prince Charming to choose us. And they wouldn't, I mean, from what you have said, it sounds like your books are a little bit different and perhaps providing more of a role model for little girls.
Yeah, I mean, I portray a range of women in my books. And I think some of my women are about, you know, Kitty Lacey, the main character, is a businesswoman. She doesn't have a boyfriend. She doesn't want a boyfriend. She's very happy, very fulfilled. But I have Rapunzel, who does really want to get married and have children. But they also have Cinderella, who gets married, but she comes back. She works. She's a working mum, Cinderella. And so you see her working even after she's married the prince. And to me, I suppose it's about choices, feminism, in a funny way. It's about, do you want to be a mum and not work? That's fine. Do you want to work and not have children? That's fine. Or do you want to combine life, working and children? And that's what women's liberation has allowed, that kind of choice to women. And I think in my books, I try and portray that it's perfectly fine if you want to get married and have children, and that's all you want to do, because that's a valuable job in itself. But you know, my main character doesn't. She wants to run this business, and that's fine too. And I think for me, those messages are quite important for girls, that you have a choice and you can do anything, and it's nice to do it well, and it's most important to be happy and enjoy it.
That's such a great message to send little girls. And the great thing, I'm looking at the covers of the Fairy Tale Hairdresser books now. I mean, they're not sickly pink. You know, there's even a bit of purple. There's a little bit of blue. Yeah. You know, it's great to see that there are other colours in there, and that it's, I mean, of course, if girls like pink, you can't, you know, stop them liking it. But just by kind of completely dedicating everything to pink, I think sometimes it's a little bit excessive.
Yeah.
But your books obviously don't do that.
I think they've got a lot of boys like them. There's a lot of fun in them. And I think the other message I've tried to get over is when you're dressing up, when you're doing your hair, it's for you. It's to make you feel good about yourself. It's not about impressing somebody else. And in fact, in my version of Cinderella, I've always had a problem with the original Cinderella story, where she just waits around for the prince and she has to look beautiful and rich for the prince at the ball, to the extent that the prince doesn't recognize her after the ball when she doesn't look so beautiful and rich, and he has to send, you know, go through the land with a glass slipper to find her. And I never liked that message. And so with my story, my Cinderella meets the prince when she's poor and he loves her there, and he says, come to the ball. And then she glams up for the ball, and he tells her how beautiful she looks, and she says, well, this isn't even my dress. And I wanted that element in. I wanted that kind of, we can dress up. It's great to dress up for fun if you feel like it, but you don't have to dress up to impress a boy. You can just dress up to go out with your girlfriends or dress up for fun. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with being a very intelligent career woman who also likes to have her nails done. You know, that those aren't incongruous these days.
Well, I think it's lovely that these books are written for, you know, preschool age children. You know, these are the messages that need to be sort of ingrained and embedded from an early age, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, girls, they vary so much. You know, they're not just one category of they like this or they like that. My daughter is fairly girly, but her best friend is really boysy, only wears shorts to school, and they just get on so well. It's just, girls can be anything, and that's the kind of message I wanted. You can be anything.
And Abby, tell us a little bit about the process of writing, because I'm sure there's lots of mums out there inspired by the fact that you've got kids and you still manage to pen all these lovely books. So tell us, how do you actually go about creating a story? And if you could include, you know, when you find time and where you sit in your house, you know, how do you go about it?
Well,
and is it an easy process?
It is a difficult process, and it's difficult from the very beginning to find the time. I mean, I find getting the idea quite simple. For me, I get the idea just from the world around. You know, someone might tell a funny story of a friend of mine, Maxine. She told me when she was little, her dad said he worked with lions. And she got all excited and she thought he was a lion tamer and told everyone at school. And then it turned out her dad worked for Lions the Tea House, not the lions the animal. And I thought it was so funny that I made a story out of it, and that comes out next year. It's called Just the Job for Dad. And so I get an idea, maybe from the world around me, and then I'll start. I sit down, I have a little study area, and I just start scribbling. I scribble words. I draw a lot, because although I didn't do the illustrations in my books, it helps me to get the drama of the story, the page turns, to work out what I want to say in the illustration as opposed to the text. And then I kind of knock up something together. And for me, because I work as well as having children, it's snatched moments of time here and there. And so it's on the tube, it's while I'm waiting to pick up from gymnastics lessons, or whenever I can find a moment. And I guess I try not to be, you know, that feeling you sometimes have of, I only have half an hour, so it's not enough, so I won't even start.
Yeah.
I try not to get that feeling. I just think even 10 minutes is great. If I'm waiting in the car for 10 minutes to pick up from a friend's house, you know, for the kids, and they're about to come out, I'll still think, well, 10 minutes, I can do a lot in 10 minutes. And so I have my little notebook, I scribble down 10 minutes worth, and then I have 10 minutes left to do next time. And so it's just, for me, it's just snatching those moments on a bus, on the tube, even just thinking on your way on the school run. That's how I managed to fit it in. And, you know, the books aren't very long, and so there are a lot of thinking time and not much sitting down and typing time. which enables me to get lots more done.
And it must be terribly exciting to show your children your published work. I mean, how have they responded?
Well, you know what? In truth, they're really bored of the whole thing now. They started off really excited, but now they've been to a million readings because my poor nine-year-old gets dragged around different shops, Waterstones, mainly, I do lots of readings in. And Lulu read my book on CBeebies. Which was wonderful. I was
so
excited.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah, and I said to my kids, Lulu's reading my book on CBeebies. And they went, yeah, Mum, we've heard that book loads of times.
Yeah.
And they just didn't even want to watch it. So kids just get really blasé. I mean, they're excited when a new one comes. They love seeing it. They love seeing that they've got their initials in the front of the book. It always says for K and E, which is my kids' names. So they always see that. But, yeah, they are a bit blasé. You know.
Well, what about the children who read the books, obviously, in the wider world? What sort of responses have you had from them?
It is really lovely. At that side, it's really, you're making me blush now. It's really, really nice to be reading in a shop and have lots of children kind of coming up to you afterwards and calling things out as you read and sort of, you know, because there's so many characters to spot. I say, you know, who can see Little Miss Muffet? And all the children put their hands up. And I like doing school visits as well because it's such a nice way to connect with children and reading and writing, because often the curriculum, there's so much to squeeze in for poor teachers that there isn't always enough time just to play. And when I go to schools, I've got the luxury of just playing. I don't care if their spelling's perfect. I don't want their grammar to be amazing. I just want them to play. And I just tell them writing is about communicating. And it's just, even if they only write a few words, even if they just draw a picture, we're communicating something. And so we make lots of lovely kind of fun books. And then I encourage them, oh, now you've got one word. Maybe we can think of another word. Because I think for some children, a page of writing is so intimidating to feel that you've got to fill that piece of paper.
Yeah.
And when I go to schools, I just say, you don't. You know, stories, they can be just told out loud. They could be told into a dictation machine. They can be drawn with pictures. I bring books with me with no words. I bring books that just have sort of cut-out shapes. And I say to children, these are books too. You don't have to sit and write and write and write. But there are some children that are more able to write than others, and they end up with a sort of longer length text at the end. But, you know, if a child just wants to draw, I think that's fine. That's fine. It's still communicating a story that they've got in their brain.
So, Abby, we've just had a text in asking about your visits to schools. Is that something people can arrange via your website?
Yep. It's www.abbylongstaff.com. And yes, on there I talk about different school visits I do. I do a whole range, mainly for primary school. In the sort of reception age, I tend to just come in and read. But as the children are older, they're sort of year one, year two, I bring some characters, some little soft toys with me, and we talk about, you know, what would this character do, what would they be like, what kind of story would make. And as they go up the school, I do more and more. And so by the time you get to year five, year six, it's more about a story. Here's the process of making a story. But I think one of the things I really try and say to them is, I don't get it right first time. And I think children feel like they've got to get it right because it's, you know, the spelling, everything's got to be written once. And I tell them when I write a book, I might write it 20 times, 30 times. It won't be right the first time. And I show them my copies from my editor where they've crossed things out and things are wrong and things don't fit. And I say, this is normal. You know, you don't ever sit down as a writer and write it out once and it's perfect. And I think children like knowing that I'm a real person who makes mistakes and gets things wrong and has to struggle and has to try and make it work. And they're real people too. So they can write a book. Anyone can write a book, you know, and I quite like that kind of message getting over to them.
It's a great lesson, isn't it, Abby, to teach them that you keep trying and trying.
Yeah.
That's what we hear in parent, you know, kind of parenting talk at the moment is, it's not important that, like you said, that you get everything perfect,
yeah,
but that your child is definitely trying his best or striving to improve,
yeah,
all the time.
Yeah.
So that's a perfect message to,
yeah,
to,
yeah,
give.
I mean,
across.
I always bring my sketchbooks along and I show how the story started and I show how it's changed, and I tell them that sometimes I have, not an argument, but I have a conversation with my editor where they say, this doesn't work, and I have to rethink, well, if this isn't this type of character, what could it be instead? I have, you know, and it's a process that You never get
right
the first
time. That's a great message. Listen, thank you so much, Abby. It's been fantastic.
No, it's lovely to talk to you. Thank you.
Well done. Thanks so much.
All the best.
Thank you.
92.6 FM.
Now, welcome back to the Parents Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. If you managed to miss the Hearts Advertiser School Award in the last last couple of weeks, I don't know where you've been hiding. You obviously haven't read anything or talked to anybody, because it's the talk of the town. And we're delighted to have the editor in chief of the Hearts Ad on the phone with us right now. Hello, Mr. Matt Adams.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm really well. How are you?
So yeah, we're like, how can you complain? Sure, the weather's just fantastic.
I know, it's glorious.
How did the Hearts Ad School Awards go?
This year or generally?
This year, and how we'll ask you about more than that, but okay. Tell us a little bit about this year. The award ceremony was at the beginning of July, wasn't it?
Yes. This year, I was gobsmacked. I stood there in front of this audience of about 200 people, thinking, and I actually said at the time, the first year we did it, which was only 3 years ago, we barely managed to fill a hall, you know, a fraction of the size, and now there were just like hundreds of people just looking at me.
Fantastic.
And I'm just amazed how successful it's become.
And well done, Matt, for organising it, because it's so fantastic that those teachers get the recognition they deserve. So
absolutely. And it's not just the teachers, it's also, you know, we've expanded a bit this year, so it's the, you know, the unsung heroes, so you've got your volunteers, you know, the mums and the PTA that, you know, do the raffle every year. We've got the support staff, so the guy that won that was a caretaker, and I can't remember which school it was, sorry, off the top of my head.
I think it was St Albans Girls School, because I was there, and he was absolute character, wasn't he?
He was amazing.
He danced up to get his award, so I think he was rather happy.
Yeah, but that's great, because he's, you know, he's the sort of person that, you know, he's cleaning the snow off the path, he's letting everyone in, he's doing all the jobs that people just take for granted, and we're just really glad we can give him that sort of platform to say thank you very much.
And Matt, as well, you were celebrating very, very special students, weren't you?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, we have some sort of sporting achievers, but we also look at those students that have really overcome adversity to do well. You know, there's the two young girls that won both had, you know, personal issues, and you know, they've overcome those, and they haven't, you know, they're not sort of sitting there griping about it. They've just pushed themselves forward and just, you know, achieved amazing things. And, you know, again, it's just worth celebrating. You know, this is we're lucky enough to live in a fantastic community where there's so much going on. And, yes, again, we take things for granted. And what we're all about is just saying, hang on a second, you know, this is brilliant. Let's shout about it.
Absolutely, and especially in an area, I mean, West Hearts specifically has such fantastic schools, one better than the next. You can hardly even, you know, you can't go wrong in the area. And to take an opportunity to celebrate everybody who's contributing to making the schools fantastic is just it's such a worthwhile thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so there's best primary school, best secondary school, best teacher.
We initially had one like an overall teacher for primary and secondary, but that proved so popular we split it up into two sections now, so that, you know, there's one for each, because I think the levels of what they do is very different. You know, you can't, I don't think you can lump them all in the same way. So, you know, the more the merrier. The more categories, the better.
And it was so lovely to see them outside the marquee at Oaklands, you know, showing everybody their certificate, what they were given, and they were really, really chuffed.
Yeah, it really does mean something to someone. I mean, if you can go, you know, further down in the line in your career, you can go for a job interview and say, look, I won this out of all my peers.
Absolutely. It's be teacher of the year.
Yeah, that is fantastic.
Yeah, and democratically elected as well. Yeah. How does the process work?
Well, there's a panel of, well, initially people nominate, we get sort of hundreds of nominations, and they explain what makes this person special. And then there's a panel of judges who are made up of our sponsors. So you've got representatives from Oaklands and local businesses. I don't sit on the panel because I think it's a bit too close for me, because I deal with a lot of the schools sort of one-to-one on a weekly basis. So it's quite nice that they, you know, they can just judge everything on their own merit without being sort of influenced, as it were. And then they, you know, they select the ones they think are most worthy. But then everyone's worthy in the end.
Absolutely.
You know, they all are.
And that must be the tricky thing to decide them. We'll just run through a couple of them. In the Teacher of the Year category, the winner for the Primary School Award went to Sarah Cropman from Cunningham Hill School. And I love it. Her nominee, the person who nominated her, said, "I've witnessed her blossom with experience and wisdom into an incredibly devoted teacher. She's taught both my children and inspired them, along with all children who are lucky enough to be taught by her." Like, what a celebration of her dedication to the kids. And then the secondary award went to Helen Cox of St. John Laws in Harpenden. And her nomination said, "Helen Cox is not so much a teacher as a force of nature," which is apt given that she's a geography specialist. And it says, as a classroom teacher, she delivers innovative and stimulating lessons and her students achieve excellent results. Fair, you know, isn't it great? And that's coming from parents, you know, probably the most critical group of people on the planet, you know.
But, you know, I guess at the end of the day, you know, it goes to show that they do take notice and they do recognise when someone's, you know, worthy of recognition, you know, rather than, you know, all criticism all the time. You know, people always say that, you know, the newspapers are full of bad news, but we like to sort of celebrate things as well and make a, you know, pick up on the positives.
An excellent community news outlet. It's great. It, honestly, great work, Matt, and well done to you for doing it.
Well, I'm just really glad that Radio Villarine linked up with us this year.
It's an honour to be associated with it.
Thank you.
Great stuff. Well, listen, I'm sure you've got a bit of babysitting to do, so we won't keep you any longer.
Lovely to meet you.
You take care, Matt. Thanks a million, Matt.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Neve Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neves includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neves Solicitors, your complete legal solution.